It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 215. I am your host, Adam Mangum. Kalani Sitake has chosen some of his new staff, and Matt and I discuss his choices, including whether Ty Detmer returning to BYU is as exciting as everyone's making it out to be. We also review the 2015 season and hand out some hardware. We finish by previewing the WCC basketball schedule and then previewing a bucket load of bowl games. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And listen to us right now. CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Matt, what's up?
Good evening.
Happy New Year to you, buddy.
It's a little early for that. Isn't it like, does it jinx the New Year? If you say Happy New Year now, isn't it like a no-hitter?
That's both. Everything you're saying now makes no sense. Number one, you can't jinx a no-hitter. That's just stupid.
Don't. You can't talk about a no-hitter.
Yes, you can.
No, you don't.
Yes, you can. That's
don't.
Superstitious.
You just don't do it. You
nonsense.
Just don't do it.
Like, if I'm on the bench, I don't talk to him. But, like, when people get mad at announcers for mentioning, like, especially nowadays where you have, like, you know, extra innings and you're flipping between games, don't you want the announcer to start off the inning with, we're in the middle of a no-hitter here, right?
No.
Oh, my gosh. Yours.
You don't talk about it. It's like Fight Club.
I knew you were going to say that. There's only one rule. All right. How was your Christmas, man? Did you get everything you hoped and wished for?
It was fantastic. I'll tell you what. Watching the kids on Christmas is the best.
Oh, it's the best. It's the best.
It's fun stuff.
It's better than being a kid on Christmas, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you, man. I'm with you. And, but Santa brought you something this year, or did you get coal again?
Oh, I got coal again.
Me too.
But that's what I asked for, so I outsmarted him this year.
Look at you. Look at you. You are smart. Do you watch the movie Elf every Christmas?
Yes.
Yes, yes. I had not watched it in several years. I watched it twice this year, and it holds up, man.
It's pretty good. It's a funny movie.
That is one angry elf.
He must be a South Pole elf.
He must be a South Pole elf. You know, and I've now seen him in Peter Dinklage in that. How do you say his last name? Is it Dinklage? Dinklage? What is it? Now I'm going to get kicked in the head by him. Anyway, I just also saw him. We were watching X-Men Days of Future Past, where he's one of the villains in that. And it's like, now he's like a big shot. Back then, he was just the guy that kicked the crap out of Will Ferrell.
Oh, but he's been in, like, Game of Thrones. He's done a bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah, he's huge. He's huge now. I mean, if you think about it, at the time, Will Ferrell was a Saturday Night Live guy. What's her face? What is her name? I can't think of her name right now. The new girl.
What is her name?
I know. I'm blanking. She was
I used
nobody.
To watch that show with her sister, Bones.
Yeah. She was nobody. Will Ferrell was becoming somebody. But, you know, there was a lot of... But it's a really good movie. It's, like, hilarious and totally holds up.
Oh, yeah. It's a great movie.
Yeah. Totally holds up. All right, Matt. Well, let's hop into... We got a jam-packed agenda. So let's go straight into the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
So, Matt, Jimmer is ripping up the D-League.
Tearing it up.
12 games so far this year, 23.3 points, shooting nearly 50% from the floor, 4.6 assists, 4 rebounds, 2 steals. In the NBA, if you have a stat line like that, they call you, I believe they call you a future Hall of Famer, is what they call you, or at least certainly All-NBA. Matt, last time we talked about this topic, I was pretty down on and not caring about the D-League. My opinion hasn't changed a whole lot. I'm glad he's having success, but it is the D-League. Has your opinion changed? You still hopeful that he can play himself into a role on a big league squad?
I don't know that I would class myself as hopeful that he'll play himself into a role. Well, no, I'm hopeful. am I expecting it? Do I think it's going to happen? I don't know.
Right.
But, and as fun as this is to watch and as fun as this is to read about, it really only matters if he does get that shot again.
Yes. Yes. In the end, it really only matters. I think to a lot of us, though, I think some people are enjoying watching Jimmer highlights, even if it is the D-League.
And he may feel differently. He may be happy to play a little bit, but you know, he wants to be in the NBA. If the NBA weren't the goal, he would have left for Europe.
That is absolutely correct. He wanted to stay a short plane right away from whatever NBA team might call his number.
Yep.
And certainly he's doing nothing in the D-League to unconvince people. Is that a word? Unconvince? I don't know.
That's probably not the word you're looking for.
It isn't. But we'll use it. We'll use it. Matt.
Never stopped us before.
No, it has not. Pete Thamel in Sports Illustrated, he has a very interesting piece this week about the Big 12. So I'll lay out the field for you, okay? And anybody that didn't get a chance to read his article. Is it Thamel or Tamel? Do you know how it's pronounced?
I've always said Tamel, but...
I think you're right. I think it's Tamel. Anyway, what he writes is basically the Big 12 is in this situation where they're a 10-team league. They want to have a playoff, which, when everybody plays each other, is stupid, by the way. But then this little thing was thrown in that maybe they would have to split into divisions in order to have a playoff, okay?
Right.
So there's some things the NCAA during the offseason will vote on this. He seems to indicate that if they get voted down and they don't like where they're at, that expansion will become inevitable and probably sooner than the next TV contracts when they're negotiated, which I think is when most of us think the next round of conference expansion will happen.
Yeah, they seem to go together real well.
Yes, they do.
Like peanut butter and jelly.
Like peanut butter and jelly. Like hot dogs and ketchup.
Like, I would have gone with mustard there.
Like BYU Cougars and Royal Blue. We'll get to that. So,
like Twitter and coaching rumors.
Yes, yes. Like, how about this? Like Twitter and coaching criticism.
How about this? How about Twitter and sources?
Sources. Hashtag sources. In the article, Tamel mentions that BYU and Cincinnati are who he tabs as the most likely two to be added. He is not at all saying that those two schools are given if they were to expand, but he just mentions those are the most likely. Cincinnati, because they're close to West Virginia, West Virginia's made no... made it no mystery that they'd like to have someone geographically close to them. Other schools mentioned UConn, no way. Colorado State, closer than UConn, I think. Houston, none of the Texas schools are putting, they're not putting Houston in their program, are they?
They don't want anything to do with that right now.
I think Central Florida and South Florida are, he mentions them, are more likely than any of the teams except Cincinnati and BYU that were mentioned. And I also think Memphis is a... is an interesting play. He mentions Tulane. I don't think Tulane would be one of the players.
No, Tulane is only interesting for geography. There's no other reason to even put Tulane on that list.
They're a good academic school. They have a good reputation. I'm just saying that was used. The Pac-12 at least paid lip service to that when they took on Utah and Colorado, right?
Research institutions.
Yes, they're research institutions. I don't think the Big 12 has the same type of restrictions. Anyway, Matt, we have not talked about conference expansion much at all this year because there just hasn't been much to talk about. Do you think this vote that's coming up for the NCAA changes things as much as Tamel thinks it could change them?
I don't think so. I'm still sitting on the big conference realignment carousel is not going to start spinning until we get into TV contract renegotiation land. And even when we get into that space, I'm not real optimistic that BYU gets a seat at the table.
I agree with you on all accounts. I also think that if they hold a championship game when everybody plays each other, they deserve the ridicule and insanity that will happen. Because what happens when your when you know, let's say Oklahoma next year goes undefeated through the league, beats everybody, and then has to beat a 2 or 3 loss team to remain undefeated, and then loses in the championship game.
It's like they've got somebody sitting around trying to come up with all of the models that are a bad idea. Oh, let's do this. Let's do this. Let's not have a conference championship game. We'll put out this, but our slogan will be one true champion. Oh, no, no, wait. Let's try this. Let's try this. Let's have them all play each other. And it's like you can't just take a look around and see. I mean, I personally believe the Big 12 should expand. I think they should play a conference championship game. I just don't think BYU is going to be where they go.
Yeah.
But I think that's there's a reason everybody else is doing it that way.
Yes, yes. And quite frankly, at some point, I don't know if the SEC or Pac-12 or Big 10, 14, whatever they are, at some point, don't you, if you're the other league, say, you got to be a 14-team league with two divisions? Don't you? Yeah. Right? Like, that's what we're doing. Everybody needs to get on the bandwagon to do that. The Pac-12 would have to expand. And that's, my friend, is where I think the Big 12, like, you talk about you're hesitant to put BYU in the expansion. That's because I'm not sure the Big 12 exists in the next round. You know, I just don't know what happens if something happens and all of a sudden Texas and Oklahoma split. Is that a Power Five conference anymore?
Not anymore.
If they add us and Cincinnati and Boise,
well, I don't know. I don't know. But look at what that look. Who are the powers in that conference right now? It's not. I mean, it's
Oklahoma.
You got TCU and Baylor.
Yeah, you've got three. Yes, but they don't have the national eyeball power of an Oklahoma and a Texas. Now, granted, you could say Texas doesn't either because the Longhorn Network has been a disaster, but. But I don't know. I don't know, man. That's a good question. And the question is, because they have a seat at the table, if something weird like that were to happen, do they get to keep their seat at the table?
I think they get to keep their seat at the table. I think this is a club.
Well, if Oklahoma and Texas split the league and BYU gets brought in, then BYU gets brought in.
Oh, if Oklahoma and Texas leave?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. But at that point, I think when you get into that space, if they're all going to expand into 14-team conferences and we get into that level, BYU's got to get in there because that's going to become a de facto split of the top division of college football.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what that will be.
Boise and, so, Boise and BYU have to scrap to somehow get into...
Do whatever they got to do.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, in theory, the SEC and the Big Ten don't have to do anything, right? How many is the Big Ten at? There are they at 14 with Maryland? Yeah, they are, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, they don't have to even do anything. I'm counting the Big Ten teams. They are at 14. I thought so, but all of a sudden it popped into my head. I still to this day, I Rutgers and Maryland just I don't feel like they belong there.
The Rutgers one, Maryland, I'm getting used to because of basketball, probably. But yeah,
Rutgers is
just doesn't make any
Still
sense
weird.
To me. Okay, but man. If you're the Pac-12, I mean, if you're Boise State, what do you try and do? I think if you're Boise State in that scenario, you try and get into the Pac-12.
You have zero. Boise State has less than a 0% chance of getting into the
Pac-12. They're a research institution.
So what? I mean,
I don't even know what they count as a research institution. What do they research
so.
At Boise State?
Growing
bluegrass.
If they go, yes, yes.
Kentucky bluegrass.
If the Pac-12 expands, it won't be Boise State or BYU, but it may enable Boise State or BYU to get into the Big 12.
Well, then who is it?
It's Texas and somebody else. I mean, quite frankly, I think Colorado State has a better shot at getting in than us or Boise.
That just makes me sick.
I mean, seriously, you look at the decision to bring Colorado, and again, they're not a bad institution. It's just, I mean, that was done out of desperation, right? They got left without somebody to come, and Utah was a football power at the time and still a very good program, made a lot of sense, top medical school, some of the other things. But, I mean, come on, let's not kid ourselves that the Pac-12 is some academic only institution, right?
I'm looking at this was it was a football decision. It was a football decision.
Well, and they had to have somebody in Colorado made a good pair geographically with Utah.
Well, because they're rival schools.
Yeah, oh yeah, a big rivalry.
It's a natural rivalry.
Yes, because, you know, I'm sure the Utah fans are coming out on Twitter and harassing whoever broadcasts the Colorado games about their coaching or whatever else. Have you seen some of the Utah fans with Rebel? He's great with trolls.
Because he doesn't. If you're Rebel, you don't care.
No, you absolutely slam those guys.
You have zero care in the world about what any of these people have to say.
No. And if when I see Utah fans say they don't care about BYU, but they have some knock on BYU in their Twitter profile, I think you may still care. So, Matt, the big news, of course, that we covered last time is Kalani Sitake is the new head coach at BYU. He has started filling out his coaching staff. You and I talked a lot about Ty Detmer last week when we talked about potential coordinators. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. He also hired Ileasi Tuiaki, right? I got that. I butchered his first name, but I'll get that down. As his offensive and defensive coordinators, also added Ed Lamb as assistant head coach and will be doing work with special teams, among other things, probably doing a lot of different things. Basically, he's put together so far what I think is a really good staff. Matt, on the 0 to Detmer scale, how excited are you about Detmer?
On the 0 to Detmer scale, I'm Brandon Doman excited about Ty Detmer.
Brandon Doman excited. So
I really just said that because it was Brandon Doman. The jury is still out for me on Ty Detmer as an offensive coordinator. I'm excited, but I'm not getting Ty Detmer level excited quite yet.
Yeah, we talked about this last week, Matt. I'm worried about him as an offensive coordinator. And I got hammered. I've never gotten so much feedback from listeners as to why I'm wrong as my comments last week about Detmer. I think being an offensive coordinator is an extremely difficult job. Everyone that watches the team thinks they know better than you how the play should be called. I think it's easy right now to have a love fest with Detmer and his football IQ and all those things, which I think are great. But in the end, he's going to have to create a really good offense. Or 12 months from now, nobody cares that you're Ty Detmer. Is that fair?
Yeah.
So what do you think about Tuiaki as the defensive coordinator and 0 to Detmer?
Actually, I really like the Tuiaki hire, but I'm probably in that same range. Maybe I'm Max Hall excited.
Yeah, Max Hall excited
about Tuiaki as the defensive coordinator. I think he's a good hire. I think he would have been a good candidate for this type of promotion at a number of programs. He's clearly bought into what BYU is all about.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited about that.
And Ed Lamb, 0 to Detmer on the Ed Lamb hire.
In the context of when it happened and what I think is going to happen there, I see the Ed Lamb hire as a brilliant move. I'm going to go ahead and label that as Ty Detmer level excitement.
Yeah. I would have said Steve Young level excitement, not quite to the end of like Detmer McMahon, but pretty darn close. I thought Lamb was a brilliant hire.
Oh, the way he rounds out the staff with the experience that he's bringing to the table, you know, because you and I have talked about this a little bit. I think you have to look at this staff holistically. You know, you look at any of these guys as individuals, especially if you remove Lamb from the equation, you've got big, I feel like you've got question marks at every one of these positions. But when you put them all together and you think about this group of guys, their collective experiences and the way that you're hoping they're going to gel and be able to work together, the whole picture looks really good.
Oh yeah, I completely agree, and I love how the staff doesn't all look alike, and I don't mean that necessarily, racially, because obviously we've got Sitake as a minority head coach. I'm really more talking about experience level, right? Like, Detmer was a high school guy, but with a college and NFL pedigree. Ed Lamb's been everywhere and done coaching at all sorts of different levels and in different locations.
Been on both sides of the ball. He's done a lot of stuff.
He's done a lot of things. He can do a lot of things. obviously, Tuiaki has also done a lot of stuff, but is more on the younger side like Satake. But he's rounding it out with more experience, less experience, NFL, college. I kind of like how he's putting it together. So, Matt, right now we're in that romance stage. Everybody on Twitter and Dick Harmon, friend of the podcast, has written a few very glowing articles about Satake and what he thinks he brings as the head coach, you know, on all those things. Matt, what will this love fest still be going on 12 months from now?
No, it's not going to be as good as it is right now. Right now, I mean, this is the best of times, right? You're undefeated. You know, you've landed a couple big recruits, at least in the, you know, I think that the Warner commitment, you know, was kind of already there. So the thing that Satake has done is he's come in and he's got some really quick wins with the staff that he's hired, with the recruits, the way that he seems to be interacting with alumni and football alumni. He's coming in and grabbing those quick wins. And that's what's helping to generate and feed and perpetuate this buzz that's around the program right now. But I think if you look at realistically what's going to happen in 2016, it's not the hardest schedule BYU football's ever played, but it's not an easy schedule. And these guys are all new. It's a whole new staff. There's going to be a lot of stuff to figure out. And I think there's going to be, I think it may be a little bit messy over the next 12 months. Not everything's going to be perfect. And one thing that any fan base shows is a lack of patience. I think all fan bases are like that. And so it'll be interesting to see what it looks like 12 months from now. I think there's going to be some frustration.
So we will do this multiple times during the offseason, but I'm going to do it right now.
Oh boy.
We're going down the line, 2016 season, win or loss. Okay.
All right, here we go.
You ready?
Right.
At Arizona.
Loss.
You're saying loss? I'm saying they open with a win. I don't think Arizona's that good, but I think it will make us overconfident, as you will see later on. At Utah.
Win.
Oh, look at you, bold man. Loss.
Oh, come on. There's no way Satake loses that game. No way.
You think Whittingham isn't going to be similarly motivated?
I think he will be similarly motivated. Yeah. But it gives you back up a game. You got to remember, Rodriguez has been – those offenses have been tough on Satake.
Did you hear that? That's Dr. Pepper.
Oh, geez. Here
fueling,
we go.
Fueling this debate. I think Utah's defense will still be very, very good, and I think our offense will having major growing pains. Now, a lot of this depends on who's the quarterback next year. We'll get to that in a second. All right, Matt. UCLA. At home.
Win.
I'm saying loss. Toledo. At home.
What? Are you skipping the West Virginia game?
Yes. Maybe.
Maybe we'll come back to that.
Wait a second. Did I... Let me get to the schedule. I thought I had transferred it to my little spreadsheet correctly, but apparently I have not. Yes, I forgot the West Virginia game. So let me back up one. And say before we get to there, it's West Virginia.
That's a tough one. I'm going to go ahead and say loss.
I'm going to say loss as well. Okay, Matt. So then we have Toledo in Provo.
I think that's a win.
I believe it's also a win. At Michigan State.
Loss.
Yes, a loss. At home against Mississippi State.
Win.
I'm going to say loss, even with some major changes coming to their roster. At Boise.
Win.
I'm going to also say win. At Cincinnati.
That's a win.
That's a win. At Southern Utah, of course, that's a win. UMass, not at Southern Utah, at home, Provo. UMass. In
that's
Provo,
a win.
That's a win.
That's
They're
a win.
Terrible. They shouldn't be a Division I team. Utah State in Provo.
That's a win.
So, Matt, you are highly, as is your thing, highly optimistic. You think they're going to go 9-3 in the regular season, equal
which,
this year.
which doesn't jive at all with what I just said 2 seconds ago.
No, but, and it also is a tougher schedule if you base it on this year's final ratings of the teams, which is not actually the best way to do it, right? To be honest, because you can't do that because these teams will change a lot.
But there's two or three games on here as we've run through that as we were walking through just now, I said as wins that could very easily be losses. The Utah game is one of those.
Yes.
The UCLA game is one of those. Mississippi State, I think, is going to be a tough game. So, I mean, this could very quickly go from my, you know, blue-colored glasses 9-3 to barely bowl eligible.
I think we win 7 games, and I think we win 6 for sure.
Well, you only got to win like 4 or 5 to get into a bowl these days.
I mean, come on. Yeah, it's true. But I think we win 6 or 7 games. If we're 6-6 in Satake's first season, the love affair's over, and people are going to be highly critical. Heck, if we lose that first game at Arizona, the love affair's over. People will be hammering the new staff on Twitter.
What will be even worse is a loss at Rice-Eccles.
I totally agree. That will be, if we open the season 0-2, there will be pandemonium in Provo and across the Twitterverse. And it's a highly likely scenario, guys. Like,
yeah, and it's okay.
And it's okay. A new staff, you know, and again, we'll get to who we think the quarterback will be in a moment. Matt, something that has excited me, though, and I know it's excited you, and for some reason, our oldest brother is not excited. There's rumors that Kalani's going to bring back the Royal Blue.
Yes.
Now, you and I are firmly on record for at least since they changed the color that we want the Royal Blue back, right?
Yes.
There's a lot of good reasons for the Royal Blue. I think the biggest ones are this. Number one, it is distinctive. Navy is, not only is it Utah State's color, it is also kind of just blends in with the rest of college football. If you go back to the 80s and 90s, BYU, you saw those Royal Blues, you knew it was BYU. Now, I know Boise State kind of is Royal Blue and we're their kind of rivals now, right? Because we play every year. But we had that Royal Blue color when I think they were still a junior college. Now, I'm being facetious, but you get my point.
We get the idea. And our grass is still green.
Yes, our grass is definitely. You know, sometimes they say the grass is greener, but in this case, it is greener.
Yes.
On this side. The other point, of course, is the tradition. The contrary arguments, Matt, are, well, first of all, a lot of current younger BYU fans don't have any memory of the Royal Blue or very little. And the second part, of course, is when there was Royal Blue, hardly anyone bought it. And I'm going to back that up. I was there in Provo. All the Royal Blue stuff was for sale. All the cool, sweet stuff I bought this summer was not flying off the shelves, Matt. And selling merchandise is part of this. Matt, should they bring back the Royal Blue?
I think they should, but correct me if I'm wrong. There's a slight difference in the shade of Royal Blue that they're using on the uniform, say, this year, when they did the Royal Blues, if you compare it to the blue that was in the uniform, say, in the mid-90s,
yes,
it's a little bit of a different blue. Yes. That's the blue I want back.
You want the mid-90s blue, which is kind of a darker Royal Blue.
Yes, that's the blue I want back. I think it is more marketable. I think you sell more merchandise that way. And I think it's a little bit I think it looks a little bit better. But you know, I'd also like to see them do, and I wonder if they're going to look into this, is what about stuff like the enlarged logo on the side of the helmet, like and those types of things? Do you think they get into that space, or do you not tweak the uniform to that extent?
See, here's the thing. Nothing about any of this is sacred, okay? The Royal Blue is not sacred. The new blue isn't sacred. Like, I want the Royal Blue, and I want the Royal Blue back. I mean, I want the 80s Royal Blue. The stuff they wear for the throwbacks. If they don't, I don't care. If they don't, what I would like to see is use that Royal Blue or even that 90s or maybe twice. Do some throwbacks 2 or 3 times. Throw the Sailor Cougar big on the side of a helmet.
Yes.
Or just, you know, do it a couple times. It's fun. You can sell stuff that way. And I don't know why, you know, I'm not saying you should be Oregon and trot out a new uniform every week, but this is not, these are not sacred things, right? I hated when they went to the more navy blue, but what I really hated was the bibs, right?
And that all happened. The tan accents.
The tan accent was terrible. But what I really missed is we lacked distinctiveness. Nowadays, I don't know that you can be distinctive, right? Even Oregon, it stopped phasing people that they walk out new uniforms every time. And I don't think you want to be in new uniforms every time, because then nobody has any idea as they're
flipping
around.
What to buy, nobody knows what to wear. And frankly, the Oregon stuff, I think they've overdone it. I mean, you look at, you know, what they did, you know, was this the end of last season when they came out in all whites and everybody's like, what is this? Well, like, they totally missed the mark.
And maybe BYU's fine doing a blackout one game in a royal blue. Maybe that's okay. And for your point, if they go do the royal blue this next year is the 90s royal blue, you'll be happy, right?
Oh, I'd love to go back. I'd even do the old block letters that were popular at that period.
Oh,
of time.
Yeah, with the black
49ers were doing, and then we did with the shadow.
Oh, yeah.
Black stripes on the helmets. Remember that?
Oh, I remember it. I remember it. And I don't remember at the time people being upset.
Oh, I remember people totally loving different. The black block letters.
Yeah, I think.
The shadow, yeah.
I'm cool with that. So, Matt, one of the things that's going to affect next year more than the color of the uniforms is who plays quarterback, okay? There are reports coming out today, we're recording this on Tuesday night, that new Virginia coach Bronco Mendenhall has offered Taysom Hill a spot on his roster. No freaking duh. That is the least surprising news.
Yeah. The day that that Bronco was announced as going to Charlottesville, didn't we all see this coming? Why is this even a surprise? How is this news?
This isn't news. This was inevitable, and I'm not really too worried about it, but we'll get to that in a second. So we have our first tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
This is from Chris Murphy. That's at CMurphyPro on Twitter. Any idea on a time frame for a decision from Taysom? It'll happen in the next couple weeks.
Yeah. Because if he's going to Virginia or Michigan or wherever he's going, he's going to enroll in classes next semester.
Yes. Well, it depends on the graduate thing can shake that up a little bit. He doesn't actually have to enroll. I don't know.
Can he go and start practicing and stuff without being enrolled?
No. No, he cannot. And he'd want to be there for spring ball. But to do that transfer, two things. Number one, he has to get a medical redshirt, which as of today, I've not heard that he has, right? Second piece to this is he has to do the graduate transfer rule. So he has to be a graduate to do that.
Well, he was supposed to graduate in December, right?
I have never heard official confirmation from anyone that that is the case. So assuming those are both the case, he can, like you said, he can start going to school here in January at Virginia or anywhere else he wanted to go. And Virginia, if he is decided to leave BYU, Virginia will not be his only option. There will be, I would guess, a half dozen Power 5 schools who have questionable quarterback situations going into next year that throw their hat in the ring, or at least, you know, feel it out a little bit, right?
Yeah, you're probably right.
So, Matt, Jared Oldman has a question on Twitter at whatever. He's got a long Twitter handle. Sorry, Jared. And he says he always listens to the end, to the very end. So,
attaboy.
We had a bunch of people tweet at me to rise and shout to the end, Matt. You thought it was dumb. You're dumb. Ha! Hashtag RS to the end. Yeah,
hey, just because a bunch of people do something doesn't make it not dumb.
Yeah, that's true. But wait a second, did you just call some of our most loyal followers dumb?
That's not what I said at all. I made a completely separate statement. I'm like the Al Jazeera reporter who's now going to say, I never said Peyton Manning took HGH.
I said this guy said it.
I said that guy. No, I didn't even say that guy said it. I said that guy said that somebody said that they mailed it to somebody who might be Peyton Manning's wife in Florida. That's all I said. Anyway, I didn't mean to open that can of worms.
Gosh, we could do a whole podcast on
circus.
That. What it is an absolute circus. And the biggest part, as we've talked about on the podcast before, I don't care. I don't even care if he did. Because guess what? If I was at the end of my career, that's what you should be doing. You should be taking stuff like that to heal. Like, it should be legal, right?
Yeah, 15 years from now, this is going to be silly.
Peyton Manning back on the field? Like, anyway. All right. So, Matt, going back to Taysom Hill, Jared asks a very important question. Why do so many fans think Taysom can't come back? If he is healthy, great. We will do great with him, and we can redshirt Tanner. And if he gets hurt, Jared points out, then you've got a potential All-American backup, backing up your potential All-American. Matt, why do so many fans think Taysom can't come back?
I think the question is Tanner interested in redshirting a year?
Yes, it's Tanner. He'll do whatever. I'm dead serious. Based on every interview I've seen of this guy, I don't think he even flinches. I think if Taysom comes back, he goes, cool. You know, he's just like, he's one of those guys. I don't think it's a problem. He's got zero J keeps in him.
Well, because that's what everybody's afraid of. That's the concern, right? Is that Tanner doesn't want to sit. Maybe Tanner leaves. What else could go wrong?
People all think he's going to get injured his first game. I think that is, while I understand it, none of these injuries have been related to another that any medical professional I've heard talk about it. They've never said these things are connected. Now, is he quote-unquote injury-prone? Maybe. But, like, typically that means soft tissue stuff. Breaking bones? Like, what if these was a broken bone, right? I think people have overplayed this. Rob Gronkowski was quote-unquote injury-prone and passed over by a bunch of NFL teams that wish they could get that back, right? I think you're moronic if you're BYU and you say, go someplace else, you're injury prone. You know what I mean?
That's moronic. I don't think you send him someplace else because you're injury prone.
But I'm not. Are you worried? Would you be worried about Tanner getting itchy feet if Taysom stayed?
Yeah, I would. And I see what you're saying, that he is a BYU guy. He's bought into this team, this program, and all these kinds of things. But the other thing is it feels like, and maybe this isn't a big deal, but it feels like you get the guy all warmed up, you get him ready, or we're going to go, and here we go, 4 years of Tanner Mangum, and now we're going to sit him a year. And then, you know, maybe Taysom gets hurt or halfway through the season or something, and now Tanner's got to come back in, and he's lost a half of a season there. There's some things in there in that scenario that make me nervous. Now, but if I'm the head coach and Taysom says, I want to come back, I'm taking him, and I'm going to play him.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on all of those counts. I think Tanner's one of those team guys. This happened to Jim McMahon. He sat a year after he had played. Now, I know that's not as common now. It's happening right now at Ohio State, and it's kind of a cluster, right?
It's turned into a total mess.
You know, and having two starting quarterbacks on your roster can be very problematic.
It usually means you don't have one, but in some cases you might legitimately have two.
No, I mean, Ohio State had two.
Ohio State had two. That was the problem they had. In this case, BYU would have two.
They would have two, and here's the problem is if Taysom struggles and you start 0-2, what do you do, right? Right, you've got this potential All-American sitting behind him who's probably more fit to run whatever pro-style offense Ty Detmer puts in place. Right? I don't know. I think Taysom makes a decision. Okay, we'll put it this way, Matt. Percent chance Taysom Hill stays at BYU?
15.
I was going to say 40, but so I'm a little higher than you, but I think it's very likely he looks at this schedule, looks at a new coaching staff, and says, I could go to Michigan and potentially win a national championship. Or heck, I could go to UVA. And if you have the surprise year, I don't think they would, but, you know, I could go there.
It's going to be a long 2016 in Charlottesville.
I totally agree with you. I don't think there's much there, and I don't think, if I'm Taysom, I don't go. Matt, do you harbor any ill will against Taysom and or Bronco if Taysom does end up in Charlottesville?
I don't hold it against Taysom if Taysom ends up in Charlottesville.
You hesitated.
I don't hold it against Taysom. I'm not going to hesitate on that point at all. Taysom's got to do what Taysom's got to do, right?
That's right.
And I think we all knew, as soon as the extent of that injury became apparent and we saw that Tanner was ready, I think that was the moment where you have to kind of accept the fact that Taysom was likely gone. Now, with Bronco going to UVA, that does introduce a new slant to the question of where is he going to go. I would have assumed that he was going to end up at Michigan. And the first thing that I thought when Bronco was announced as the coach at UVA is Taysom's gone. He's going to Ann Arbor.
Right.
Now, but Taysom and Bronco do have a good relationship. I think there's a chance that Bronco could talk Taysom into going there. So can I hold any ill will against Bronco for taking Taysom to Charlottesville? No, probably not, because I think Taysom was going to leave either way.
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't harbor any ill will about any of this stuff, honestly. I really don't care that much about other people making their decisions. I'd love Taysom to stay. I think he's just awesome, and I really would love to see him play another full healthy year and do something special potentially with this schedule. I built my predictions, though, on when we went through that. I think you win 9 or 10 games with Taysom. I don't with Tanner. I think Taysom just changes things at the college level. And Tanner, though very good, he struggled against good defenses this year.
And, you know, he had no offseason. He had no prep.
Nope.
So I think we see a completely different Tanner in 2016.
Okay, that's very fair. That is very fair. I think he will be much improved. And he will have, in theory, Jamal Williams back there to hand the ball off, and Squally Canada, and Francis Bernard.
Yeah, that's not a bad situation.
That is not a bad situation. So, Matt, let's do our little football season in review before we move on to basketball.
Here we go.
All right. Rapid fire, Matt. Rapid fire. Offensive MVP.
Tanner Mangum.
Tanner Mangum, I'm with you. That's consensus. Not any other candidates you seriously considered?
No.
Me either.
I mean, if we're just going rapid fire here, no. Was I looking for kind of the dark horse candidate? Is there an offensive lineman or somebody? You know, one of the running backs by committee that surprised me, or something in that space. But at the end of the day, it's got to be Tanner.
It's Tanner. Defensive MVP. I think we're also going to have consensus. I picked Mr. Kafusi.
That's interesting. I picked Kai Nakua.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, Nakua had a good year. I'm just a little surprised, I guess. Kai Nakua, huh?
Yeah, six interceptions? Two for touchdowns?
Good. Two for touchdowns is good.
I think you got to give him something there.
He's
scoring points on the defense, man. Come on.
10 sacks. 19 and a half tackles for loss.
Hey, look, Kafusi had a good year. All right. I'm going to let you finish.
A good year.
But you know, I'm doing the Kanye thing.
Yeah, I know.
Thing.
Thanks.
Don't interrupt
Thanks,
me while
Kanye.
I'm interrupting you with the Kanye thing.
Yeah, I can actually, but go ahead.
You can't interrupt my interruption. No, really. I think it comes down to those two, and maybe I'm just trying to be clever here. Cause I knew you were going to go Kafusi.
Yeah, you're being too cute, I think, on this one.
Kafusi, you also had an interception.
But I thought Michael Davis was second choice for me, actually.
Really?
Lockdown corner, man. I think he is the best player on this team that we're not talking about. I think he changed. I thought we were going to be very hard, easy to pass against this year, and we were not. And that had to do with the pressure up front that Kafusi and others brought. It also had to deal with the fact that one of the wide receivers on almost every play was taken away. And he's not like almost every other cornerback in the history of creation. He did not do big celebrations when somebody threw the ball 10 yards over the receiver set.
You know who else probably belongs in this conversation is Tua Loma.
Yeah, oh yeah, Tua Loma. Yes.
You know, you don't get a lot of pretty stats when you play that position and when you're asked to fill the role that he fills. But when you see what teams did when he was not on the field versus what teams did when he was on the field, I think you've got to think about him in this conversation as most valuable defensive player.
Absolutely. It becomes much harder to double-team Kafusi when you have to worry about Tua Loma.
Yep.
Just is. Matt, special teams MVP. When we talked about this one before the podcast, it's kind of like by default, it's Trevor Sampson.
Yeah, there's no other choice. But there's really, not even a list here.
I mean, Lenahan did okay as first year punting, and the return game was pretty abysmal. So we will stick with Mr. Sampson. Biggest surprise this year for you?
The biggest surprise for me is that BYU outscored their opponents in the fourth quarter, 141-68.
Yes, does not fit the narrative of either the career of Bronco or Robert and I.
That's right. Being able to finish, step on a team's throat, those types of things. The comeback wins, the almost comeback wins. Fourth quarter performance was really surprising to me.
Yeah, biggest surprise to me was the defense against the passing game. I thought we'd be better against the run than we were, but we were pretty good against the pass, Matt. We shut down some pretty decent pass offenses, and it was what kept us in a lot of games. Some that we won, unfortunately, some that we didn't. But, I mean, you look at Utah. I mean, the only reason we're able to do that comeback is because they can't pass the ball for 3.5 quarters. They can't throw it hardly at all. Biggest disappointment for you this year?
You know, when I was looking at this, this one was a tough one for me to decide, because I got a list of a handful of things here that could get named. But what I did is I did the gut punch test. Which of these things felt like the worst gut punch on my whole list? And I'm going to go with the first quarter of the Utah game.
That is definitely it. For me, it is the fourth quarter of Missouri. We were there in person, which makes it, I don't know if it makes it worse, but that was the biggest disappointment to me. Was we should have beat Missouri. We could have beat Missouri, and we would have had a double-digit win season. That was my biggest disappointment.
We let one slip away there.
I mean, Utah was a better team than us, right? I mean, the way that game started was terrible, and I understand why you picked it. Missouri was not a better team than us. I think one of the worst losses of the Bronco era, to be honest. Not as bad as Virginia.
I'm with you there. But by the time the first quarter of the Utah game was over, I wanted to turn off my television. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it, but I was like, I don't even want it. This is ugly.
It was bad.
I threw up a little bit.
Best win this year.
You know what? I'm digging way back here. I'm going back to the beginning of the season, and I'm going to say Nebraska
in Lincoln.
That was awesome.
On the
Hail Mary and all those things. Now, you know, when we talked about this at the Nebraska game, we're like, did we peak? Is this the most exciting game? Is this the biggest win of the season?
The
answer was yes. And I don't mean that to disparage the rest of the season.
No.
But that was an amazing win. With the injury and all this, I mean, that was awesome.
You had four moments at Missouri. Well, I guess it was a neutral site technically, at Michigan, at UCLA, and at Nebraska. You had four times to make a big, huge statement. And you only won one of those games. So it's got to be Nebraska, I think.
Yeah.
It's got to be Nebraska. Worst loss. I already gave up. Missouri's the worst loss to me.
I'm going to go with Michigan.
But Michigan's that was good.
It
was terrible.
Shut out. I mean,
that was
awful.
Is bad. It was bad.
It was embarrassing. It was
embarrassing.
The way that, you know, and I know there was a lot of attention on the Missouri game and the Utah game as well, but there was a lot of attention on that game. And
you
were on a real high from, you know, I think we were still kind of riding I know that we just lost the UCLA game, but you beat Boise State,
and
you beat Nebraska and Lincoln, and yeah, you barely lost to UCLA. We're really good. We're going to do this. Maybe this is the last game we'll lose all year. Look at the rest of the schedule. You know, Harbaugh still needs a year to turn this thing around, and then gut punch.
Yeah, gut punch indeed. Boy, that was terrible. Matt, let's look back at some of our predictions. Okay, are you ready?
Yeah, this will be interesting.
We did over-under, okay? We did our over-under game at the beginning of the year. Both. Oh, by the way, for game by game, you predicted BYU to win 10 games. I predicted 9. I'm better than you. So there you go.
Whatever.
I had the losses in the wrong places, kind of. But anyway, That's where we're at. That's where we're at. Do you know after week one you picked Cincinnati to lose, us to lose to Cincinnati?
Cincinnati was looking really good.
I know.
In September.
Yeah, and they were not. Anyway, so we did this over-under. We did over-under. Now, some of these, we're going to cheat a little bit, but Taysom, 3,200 yards passing. We both picked over. We both win, Matt. Tanner had 3,377 yards passing. So I guess a win.
That's good, but had you asked us, either of us, the question at the beginning, Taysom gets injured, does Tanner throw for 3,200 yards?
I would have said yes. I would have said yes. Because the offense would... I think because the offense is a passing offense. I would have gone.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's easy to say now. So, yeah, I would have said yes, too. Sure.
We said it in, like, the second week, and Ninny, I'll go back and look it up. We both took over, by the way, on that in week two. I'll have you know. So take that, buddy.
All right.
I did some research. I did some podcast research today. I was, quote-unquote, working from home, so... You know how that goes.
Oh, working from home is the best.
It's the best.
I worked from home today, too.
It's the best. Taysom, 1,100 yards rushing. We're going to not count that one. Not fair. Taysom, 32 touchdowns total. Matt Tanner had 23. I said under. You said over. That's kind of an unfair one, too, because of all the rushing touchdowns. Mitch Matthews, over 1,000 yards receiving. We both said under. He finished with 723. Good for us. We are good. Nick Kurtz, 70 receptions. Oh, wow, I was not close. I said over, you said under. He finished with 39.
I'm better than you.
I think his numbers are massive next year, by the way. I think he's got the talent, and he'll be big. Any BYU running back over 700 yards rushing? I had over, you had under. Algie Brown finished with 737.
It turned out to be a pretty good line.
He was a surprise, right? Like, I didn't.
Well, and it was a little bit of a late bloom.
Yes, it was. I thought he was better than I thought he would be. I didn't actually think it would be him. So, yeah, but that wasn't part of the over under. Kafusi, 6.5 sacks. We both had over. Feels low now. He finished with 10. Any Cougar with 85 or more tackles. I said over, you said under. Wadsworth led the team with 79. So you were correct. I was wrong. And Wadsworth leading your teams in tackles is not a good thing.
No.
But I will say that Warner and Longy were about where we thought they would be as far as rank on the team. Second, tied for second on the team. BYU defense over under 23.5 points per game. We both said they would be over that. But we meant better, right? I didn't go back and listen. I thought we both thought they would be better than 23.5.
Yeah,
right?
I think we meant better.
We meant better. 22.8, so a little bit better. Not a ton. Average yard per play. I thought they would be better than 4.75 yards per play. You thought they'd be worse. You were correct. 4.9 yards per play.
I'm better than you. I'm
going
to say that in every one of these categories.
Wait a second. Let's see how many wins I have. I had one for passing. I had one. We won't count the TD one. That's unfair. I had two. I had three, four. I think you are better than me. Five. And I think you had six or seven. So maybe you are better than me at this one thing in life.
You set some pretty good lines, though.
I did set some pretty good lines. They were right there.
I mean,
they were
79 tackles for Wadsworth. That's crazy.
Yeah, 79, and I had 85. So they were good lines. I did my research on that. All right, Matt, it is time to – wow, we are at 53 minutes already, and we haven't even talked basketball yet, and we've got a bunch of bowl games to preview. So buckle in, folks. Hashtag RS to the end. All right, let's talk some basketball here, Matt. Hawaii trip. Let's say you said they would win two games. You were correct. The order didn't happen exactly as we thought. I said they would not. Matt, do you feel better or worse about their tournament chances now than you did before the Hawaii trip?
I feel exactly the same. I don't feel good about their tournament chances.
I feel totally different. and I feel good about them. Now, I'm not saying they're getting in, but they demolished New Mexico. Absolutely demolished them. And beat a Northern Iowa team that's, I think, similar to Mexico in quality, and beat them as well. The loss to Harvard hurts, but I don't know. I feel like this team is starting to click, and all they have to do is, I mean, we'll get to the conference preview here in a second. All they have to do is beat Gonzaga and St. Mary's once going into the conference tournament. I think they got a chance. But you don't feel the same way.
No. Well, I think you may be right. Maybe that's what they need to do to have a chance. I don't know how good I feel about their chances of getting that done.
Well, let's talk about that right now, Matt, because we got the conference here. Basically, this is the way the conference is boiling down. At the beginning of the season, you and I both thought that it was Gonzaga and everybody else, with us, you know, a whole level down from Gonzaga, and then everybody else a whole level down from us. That is not the way it's looking going into the season. St. Mary's right now is looking to be maybe as good as Gonzaga, and I would not have predicted that at the beginning of the year. The computers wouldn't have predicted that at the beginning of the year. And then we're at a different level, and then it's everybody else. So, Matt, unfortunately, this is starting to look a lot like a few years ago.
Yep.
And the question is, Matt, can we beat both of those teams once in conference play? Because that's what you're going to need to do.
Right. You need to split those series? Or yes. Do you think if you beat St. Mary's twice and lose to Gonzaga twice, you still get in? Like, so do you just need two wins out of those four games?
You need two wins out of those four games. You need one against each. Okay. No, you don't need one against each.
I don't think you get there.
I think you do, because right now, if you lose all of those games, you win 23. If you split, you win 25, I think you're in. Now, I think you give yourself a chance to be in. Let me put it that way. It's not a guarantee. But 25, typically you're in with 25 wins. And they would have, you know, ugly loss against Long Beach, quality loss against Utah, quality loss against Colorado. The Harvard one, we'll see. They were preseason darlings. They haven't played that well, but by the end of the year, I don't know how that loss will be viewed. I think you'll have some good out-of-conference wins against Belmont, New Mexico, Northern Iowa. So I think there's some chances there. And if you split, then you've got two other top 40, top 50 wins. I don't know. I think you've got a shot. You give yourself a shot. If you lose a couple of weird conference games, which seems to happen every year, and only get one or zero of those four games we talked about, I don't think you're dancing. Yeah, I think you're in the NIT.
And that's exactly my fear, is that you get one of those four games against St. Mary's and Gonzaga, and you drop one weird conference game.
Yeah.
And I think that puts you just outside the bubble.
Yeah, what you're talking about is a very likely scenario. So Matt, one thing that has been brought up, there was an article in a couple different places who've been talking about Kyle Collinsworth as underrated player. Matt, why he's Mr. Triple Double? Not everyone, but a lot of people seem to discount that. Well, we didn't keep that stat when Oscar Robertson was playing. In college. But Matt, they've been keeping it for a while, and there have been some really good guys that came through college that didn't get it. Matt, why is he underrated?
No, I think people know exactly how good he is.
I agree with you. I think nationally he is not underrated.
You listen to the national talking heads. I mean, people seem to know who he is.
I think
he's about, yeah.
Casual basketball fans, he's probably underrated. Everyone I talk to who at work or other places who are big into college basketball, they know exactly who Kyle Collinsworth is. There's no mystery about who he is. So, Matt, as we look at the players so far, who is the biggest surprise for you this season in a good way so far for a basketball team?
Biggest surprise in a good way?
Yeah. Biggest surprise in a good way.
I go back and forth on this, but can I say Chase Fisher?
Wow, I wasn't expecting that, but sure. Yeah, you can say Chase Fisher.
When he's good.
Yes, the good Chase Fisher is the biggest surprise.
Well, if I go to like earlier in the season, or if I go to my expectations before the season and now, it's not a big surprise, right? But there's points in the season where I had totally given up on Chase Fisher, right?
Yeah.
And then you get this flash of greatness, and so I've been surprised by that when I'd kind of given up.
Yeah, it's funny. You look at, so if you take out the first four games where he was pretty mediocre against pretty mediocre competition, he has been on kind of a tear since then, with the exceptions of our two losses in that time frame. Two of our three losses. He was good against Utah, but he was terrible against Colorado, and he struggled against Harvard.
But he bounced back after the Harvard loss.
Oh my gosh, did he bounce back. 41 points, 5 boards, 4 assists, and hit 9 three-pointers. Yes, when he is on, we win. When he is not, so far this year, we have not beaten a decent team when he had a bad game. And heck, we lost to a pretty not good team in Long Beach State with him having a bad game. I think just like last year, we will sink or swim where his streaks take us.
Yep.
I would say my pleasant surprise this year is Zach. I did not, when we talked about at the beginning of the year, whether who would be the most important players on this team, I did not have Celius in my top five.
But you do now, don't you?
I absolutely do. I think he's one of our top five players. I think it goes Collinsworth, and then the order here between the next three is probably fairly interchangeable in Davis, Fisher, and Emery, and then it's him. You know, Kafusi has started off pretty well, but has been kind of mediocre since then, which I think is just growing pains for a guy that is still, I think, learning how to play basketball at a high level.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. Well, that's our season preview, conference preview. We both are, I'm a little bit more optimistic, you're a little bit more pessimistic, which is kind of the opposite in basketball. This always happens. I'm more optimistic and you're more pessimistic. And then in football, it's the reverse.
I'm just more objective.
When it comes to basketball?
I get way too emotional about the football team.
Yes, you do. But that's okay. I don't hold that against you at all. Well, Matt, we are now about to preview a bunch of bowl games.
Oh, boy.
Are you ready for this?
Buckle in, kids.
We have... this.
No idea what we're doing. That's what we have.
No idea what we're doing. We already previewed the games for today, Tuesday the 29th. We now need to, of course, preview starting on the 30th. So let's get to it. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Wednesday, December 30th. We start off with the Birmingham Bowl, 6-6 Auburn, 9-3 Memphis. Auburn is favored by 3.5. Who you got?
I got Auburn.
I also have Auburn. Will there be over-under punches thrown at the end of the game?
I'm taking Memphis in the first round of the post-game brawl.
Awesome. Percent chance you watch any of this game?
This is tomorrow, kickoff at 11?
11 a.m. Central Time.
Yeah, I probably am not going to be available.
It's 0% for me. I won't end up seeing any of this game. 2:30 Wednesday afternoon is the Belk Bowl in beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina. 7-5 NC State, 8-4 Mississippi State. The Bulldogs are favored by 6.5. Matt, who you got?
I'm taking the Bulldogs and the points, baby.
I am too. I think Bulldogs roll SEC over ACC. Despite it being in North Carolina. Percent chance you see any of that game?
70%.
I'd put mine at like 85. I think I will end up watching, especially if it's at all interesting in the third quarter. The evening kicks off with the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl. Very
it's
long
a lot name. Of words. A
lot
Lots
of words put together. Nashville, Tennessee. Not sure why they play one there. Nashville's beautiful. I just think all of these should be super warm weather places. 8-4 Texas A&M against 7-5 Louisville. The Cardinals are favored by 4.5 points. Matt, who you got?
You know what? I'm going to take the Aggies in an upset.
I am going to take Louisville to win, but Texas A&M will cover. So a close game.
I like it. But Texas A&M's got some. They've got issues right now.
Yeah, yeah. They
got
definitely
quarterbacks have leaving. They got all sorts of crazy.
They've got all sorts of crazy things going on. This could also be an absolute blowout for Louisville.
Yeah, it could be a complete dumpster fire.
There is a massive range of possible outcomes here. I'm not sure which one ends up coming true. Percent chance you see that game?
80%.
It's near 100% for me. I definitely will see at least part of that game. The nightcap, Matt, is the National Funding Holiday Bowl, a bowl that is dear to many BYU fans' heart in beautiful San Diego, California. 8-5 USC, who's kind of was rolling at the end of the year. 9-3 Wisconsin. The Trojans are favored by 3.5. Matt, who you got?
I'm taking the Badgers because I'm a Big Ten homer.
I am also taking the Badgers. I think USC is overrated. I think it's a close one.
But has this season not taught us that USC is overrated? We don't know that by now.
No, we always go back. They start winning a few games in a row, and everyone starts talking about them like they're the best again.
Stop it.
Like, wow, they should. If they had just had it together at the beginning of the year, they'd be in the Final Four. Well, yeah, so would a bunch of other teams, right? Yeah, that's the whole point. So, Matt, on New Year's Eve, despite my protestations, they are still doing the college football semifinals on New Year's Eve.
Shocked that they didn't change their mind after you talked about it so much.
Well, I think they'll change their mind after their ratings take a massive dip, but we'll see. On New Year's Eve, 11 a.m., the bowl that nobody cares about that day, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. Oh, stop it, Adam. The fans of Houston and Florida State care.
I think a lot of people watch this game.
I do too. All joking aside, it's just, you know, when you're going up, the only two other games that day are playoff games. You know, at least you don't have to go head to head against them. 12-1 Houston, 10-2 Florida State. Florida State is favored by a touchdown. I'm taking the Cougars.
I'm also taking the Cougars.
Yeah, I hate that line. I would definitely not take. I would not take Florida State to cover that.
No.
Regardless. At 3 p.m. Central Time, of course, is the first playoff game. It's the Capital One Orange Bowl in Miami. 11-1 Oklahoma, undefeated Clemson Tigers. Oklahoma is favored by 3.5. I'm taking Clemson.
Oh, Boomer Sooner, baby.
Boomer Sooner. So we'll get back to that in a second. No, actually, let's talk about that now. It's the playoffs. We can spend a little bit more time on it. Matt, I think Clemson is good. I was not in their camp all year, and here I have done a 180, and I don't think the Tigers win the title, but I do think they win this game. I think Oklahoma's not going to be able to keep up with their offense.
I think Clemson is overrated.
All right. So percent chance that that TCU coach Gary Patterson runs onto the field and tackles the Oklahoma quarterback for bashing him.
100%.
That would be awesome. Patterson just runs.
We need a little bit more WWE style stuff happening, right?
Hey, it's just like I told you. If Whittingham had come out at halftime of that BYU Utah game and torn off his red stuff and it was all blue underneath, I mean, can you imagine the pandemonium? It would have been awesome. So, percent chance. Oh, we didn't do this. Percent chance you see some of that Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. Oh, Chick-fil-A.
It's 100%.
100% for me, too.
And percent, how about percent chance you eat Chick-fil-A while watching the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl?
Unfortunately, the closest Chick-fil-A to me is 30 minutes away, so probably not high.
Oh, that's sad. I have, within 30 minutes of my house, I don't even know how many Chick-fil-A's I have.
Oh, yeah. That's great. So I will see that game. Percent chance you see the Orange Bowl, 100%, right?
100%.
The nightcap, of course, is the Goodyear Cotton Bowl in Arlington, Texas, at the house that Jerry built. 12-1 Michigan State, 12-1 Alabama. Alabama is favored by a whopping 10 points. I am taking the Tide, but not to cover.
Oh, come on.
You're a Big Ten homer. You're actually taking Michigan State.
Didn't we do this a year ago? Didn't we do this exact drill a year ago?
No.
With Ohio State?
No. Ohio State was undefeated, and they were awesome. Michigan State is not undefeated, and
they lost on a fluky, weird play at the end of a game. This Michigan State team is for real.
They only beat Michigan. They only didn't miss this whole thing because the frickin' Michigan punter dropped the ball.
Well, he kind of punted it over the back of his head or whatever he was trying to do.
No, Michigan State is very good. Alabama is the best team in the nation right now. They're playing the best. So now you know what I'm going to do when we come to the national championship game here in a second. Interested to see what you do. So you got Michigan State winning the game.
Yep.
All right. All right, man. On January 1st, what should be the best day in college football, but it's unfortunately not, starts with the Outback Bowl, 10-2 Northwestern, 8-4 Tennessee. Tennessee is favored by 8.5. I'm taking the Wildcats.
You're crazy.
Overrated Volunteers. Are you taking Tennessee to cover?
What was the spread again?
8.5.
Yes.
Spread.
All right. I'm taking the Vols and the points.
Wow, look at you not being a Big Ten homer.
Well, I have to pick one Big Ten team to lose.
That's right. I guess you do. Buffalo Wild Wings Citrus Bowl, 9-3 Michigan, 10-3 Florida. Michigan is favored by 4. I'm taking the points and Michigan.
I'm just saying, if Buffalo Wild Wings doesn't put out a special citrus wing as part of a promotion for this, they're losing.
Aren't they giving away a different kind of wing depending on who wins?
I don't know. I'm not paying that close of attention, but I need to find that out.
That's the Outback Bowl. It's the shrimp, different kind of shrimp or something.
Yeah, I don't care about
getting
that.
My bowls mixed up. Battle Frog Fiesta Bowl. I'm not even sure what a Battle Frog is.
Hold on, I didn't pick the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl.
Buffalo Wild Wings. Who you got?
I'm taking the Wolverines. Percent chance you watch that game?
100%.
Yeah,
and that goes true for the Outback Bowl too. At noon that day, Battle Frog Fiesta Bowl. 10-2 Notre Dame, 11-1 Ohio State. Ohio State is favored by 6.5. I'm taking the points and the Buckeyes, as much as that pains me.
I'm taking the Buckeyes.
100% chance I watch that game.
Yep.
Rose Bowl game presented by Northwestern Mutual, because heaven forbid we call it the Northwestern Mutual Rose Bowl game. Oh, those Rose Bowl people. They love tradition. 11-2 Stanford, 12-1 Iowa. The Cardinal are favored by 6. I'm taking the Hawkeyes to win it.
Come on, man.
I hate the trees.
Come on.
Actually, I think that's legit. I think Stanford is very good. I think this will be a fantastic game, but I'm picking the Hawkeyes. You?
I think it's going to be a great game, but you may not talk to me after this, but I'm picking Stanford to win.
What?
Yeah.
I feel betrayed.
Yeah. So I'm picking 2 Big Ten teams to lose. 2.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. 12-1 Iowa. Almost made the national playoffs.
Mm.
Kind of. Not really.
I think we're all going to find out at the Rose Bowl why we're glad that Iowa didn't get into the playoffs.
We shall see, my friend. At the nightcap, of course, is the All-State Sugar Bowl in Narlands. 10-2 Oklahoma State, 9-3 Ole Miss. Ole Miss is favored by 7. I am taking Ole Miss, but not to cover.
I've got Oklahoma State.
Well, look at you. 100% chance I see that game.
Yeah, absolutely. Any game played on January 1st, I'm watching it.
So rapid fire here on the 2nd of January, Taxslayer Bowl, 7-5 Penn State, 9-3 Georgia. I'm taking Georgia.
I'm also taking Georgia, even with craziness going on with the coaching carousel.
Yes, 100% chance I see that game.
Yep.
Liberty Bowl that afternoon, 6-6 Kansas State, 7-5 Arkansas. Make me yawn a little bit more. I am taking Kansas State.
I'm going to just disagree with you and take Arkansas.
Okay, they're favored by 13, but I don't really care. Percent chance, there's about a 50% chance I see some of this game.
That's going to be a lot of football at that point. I'm probably going to have to like at least recognize the fact that I have children at some point during the day,
yes.
And it'll probably be during this game.
I agree with you. The Valero Alamo Bowl, 9-3 Oregon, 10-2 TCU. TCU is favored by a point. I'm taking the Ducks.
I'm also taking the Ducks.
100% chance I see some of that game.
Yep.
The Motel 6 Cactus Bowl. We're moving to 9 o'clock church. We are at 1 o'clock church. This will affect my ability to stay awake for this game. 7-5 West Virginia, 6-6 Arizona State. I am taking West Virginia, Matt.
I'm also going to take West Virginia, but really? Why is this game being played at this time slot?
I have no idea.
That's insane. This game should have been played today.
I will not watch this game, actually.
The Motel 6 Cactus Bowl? Are they kidding me?
It's terrible. It's like when the GoDaddy Bowl was after January 1st.
You got two basically 500 teams. This is just silly.
It's silly. I'm not watching.
Get this game away.
So Matt, national championship. We disagree a bit. You've got Michigan State and who did you pick?
Oklahoma.
I've got Clemson and Alabama. I have Alabama winning the whole thing.
I got the Spartans.
Got the Spartans. Roll Sparty.
I think the BYU is going to roll into East Lansing next year to play the defending national championship Michigan State Spartans.
That'd be cool. That'd be very cool. Well, Matt, we have picked a bunch of bowl games. Done. We're done. Though we'll probably talk a lot about the national championship next week on the podcast. Also next week on the podcast, we will, of course, talk about what happened with St. Mary's on New Year's Eve. Percent chance you watch, you're flipping between a bowl game and the St. Mary's game on ESPNU.
Oh, 100%.
100%. It'll be awesome. So thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. Hashtag RS to the end, if you made it with us thus far. It's probably going to end up with editing to be like a 116-minute show, which is, an hour and 16-minute show. That's awesome. 116 minutes, that may not be so awesome.
Nobody's going to RS to the end that one.
Yeah, no one is going to do that. But thank you for downloading and listening. Check us out on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/RiseAndShout. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars. I wanna hide the truth, I wanna shelter you, but with the beast inside, there's nowhere we can hide. No matter what we breed, we still are made of greed. This is my kingdom come, this is my kingdom.